Jim, James, Tim. What's his name? I wrote it down. Jeff.
Please welcome Jeffrey Lord.
Oh, this is for the Jeffrey Lord show.
Lord, really? I thought Jeffrey Lord was kind of like a real guy.
How are you supposed to be a strong, thrilling, powerful warrior and lover with a name like this? It is like a weak ejaculation. Jim.
The Lord is the gatekeeper of all music in Fort Worth.
Oh, Jeffrey.
If you don't love the Lord, you're F and F.
Like, really, is this the level that you sung to, Lord? So I'm done with Jeffrey Lord.
All right, everybody, welcome to another Funky Town podcast, and I am your host, Jeffrey Lord. All right, everybody, settle down, take your seats. Let's get comfortable. We got a big show for you tonight. I'm super excited to bring it to you. My interview is with Stephen Prigmore. He's super cool. If you don't know him, you're going to enjoy getting to know him. He's been playing around Fort Worth forever, and so he's got a brand new record out, and I wanted to have him on to talk about it. He sent me the whole album over, and it is so good. Before we get started, I do want to just talk about a couple of things. I plan on talking about, kind of seems like old news now, so I'll just kind of hit the bullet points. One, the Methinks show, the Saturday before Halloween, was awesome. Lola's was great. All the bands that played were great. Locos Gringos, the spectacle, all the costumes, the fire truck and ambulance is coming because Susie almost killed somebody. It was just a great night. The next day at Lola's was Sunday, the day before Halloween, and they had the Rock and Roll Rummage Sale. Lady Lord was out there selling her wares. She did really good. She sold a lot of stuff. The girl was in the costume contest, and I went out there to see Remy Riley, and she was great. The costume contest was awesome. It was really cool that day. It was just neat because I was sitting there, I was looking around and seeing all the kids running around in costumes and adults in costumes and candy and music and all the different things that people are buying. And it was just like, this is really cool. The weather was perfect. It was like something out of a movie. Speaking of something out of the movie, the next day was Halloween, and man, Fairmont goes from Fairmont to Scaremont. And man, they did it up this year. Every year it gets a little crazier, a little bigger, and it was cool this year. But all that stuff seems like old news. So as far as things currently going on, if you're listening Monday or Tuesday, make sure you go vote. Please, 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 please. Vote. And also, that's for the national midterm elections. But if you're not really into that kind of thing, make sure you vote for the Fort Worth Weekly Music Awards. It's been out for weeks now. Links are out there. Go there. Make sure you vote for your favorite bands. All right. So let's go on with the show. So I decided to do something a little different this week. I had a group of songs ready to go to play for you guys. And did the interview with Stephen on Thursday night. And then after talking to him, I was like, you know what? He talked about a lot of different bands in this. Let's go through and try to find some music from some of the bands that he talked about. So the show this week is going to be just that. He tells a fantastic story about Guthrie Kinnard, and Guthrie Kinnard is one of my local heroes. That dude's awesome. So we're going to start off the show with a song from Guthrie. It's his De Los De Mortis song called The Streets of Juarez. It's awesome. It's great. So in honor of the holiday, in honor of Guthrie and Stephen, we're going to start off with that song. Then we're going to go into Shame on You, Shame on Me by Clay Parker and his wife, Jody James. And we talk about them. Clay Parker had a big hand in this record, played some instruments, I think recording and producing and that kind of stuff as well. And then after that, we'll get into a brand new recorded full studio album version of Door Girl by Stephen. Then we'll get into the interview. After the interview, we'll play another Stephen song, which I usually don't do, man, but this album is so good, and there's so many songs I wanted to play. I had a hard time picking two. I could have just played six songs of his on the show, but we're come out with this song, Real Man, which might be my favorite song on the album. I love it so much. And then after that, we're going to hear Let Me Tell You What I Think, and that's by Ordinary Elephant. And their part of the record as well. I think the gentleman in it played mandolin and some of that. I think he's from there. But we talk about Ordinary Elephant in the band as well, or in the interview as well. And then we'll close it out with a song from Heather Little called Everybody Knows. And I haven't heard of Heather Little before, but he covers one of her songs on the album Razor Wire, which is incredible. So he kind of schooled me on Heather Little a little bit. And so I was like, whoa, cool. So we're going to close out with her. She's fantastic. So if you like the East Texas, South Louisiana type music, you know what I mean? The East Texas music and South Louisiana vibes. I think you're going to enjoy this. I think you're going to enjoy the songs. I know you're going to love the interview. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get it started off with Guthrie Kinnard and Streets of Juarez.
See you turning tricks down on the road. whoop the devil. Just a song, just a song. I can't run a shotgun, honey, all day long. Well, I can make you biscuits till cows show up. Tell you all you want to know about a liquor cup. But there's something in the way. I can't get you, babe. Can't get you, babe. Door girl, so pretty and so small. Like to call me, honey, but I can't call you at all. Well, don't act like bitchin' woo. Old folks like to rock. Me, I like to do it in just my t-shirt and my socks. But it's something in the way. I can't get you, babe. I can't get you, babe. Story. Tell me, how's it gonna be? Bring it on down to my house. Let me roll you like the sea. Well, you can leave your shirt on. You don't have to wash my socks. You don't have to worry, honey. I've been checked for monkeypox. But there's nothing in the way. You, babe. I'm gonna get you, babe. Here I come.
Hello, this is Jeffrey Lord with the Funky Town Podcast calling for Stephen Prigmore.
This is he. What's up, Jeffrey?
Dude, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing real good.
Good. I'm right now. I just left my hog hunting spot and on my way to sit in the Brookshire's parking lot and talk to you.
Oh, yeah? You're out hog hunting?
Yep.
Did you get anything?
No, not tonight. Today was like some maintenance stuff on the area where I'm hunting.
Okay.
The focus, but yeah.
So whenever you hunt hog, can you eat that meat, or is that too wild where it's not good?
I sure do.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I make chili. I've been making hams out of the back legs the last few years. It's pretty cool. Like curing it and smoking it was pretty neat.
Yeah, see, I always wondered if you could eat the big old wild boars that are out there, if it was just the farm raised ones or whatever. I didn't know if they were, because they're wild, if the meat was too gamey or tough, or
you know, like taste is subjective, like everything else, but it's all in the preparation, you know?
Sure.
Like just like anything else.
You cook it slow with a lot of smoke, a lot of spices.
Yeah, or, you know, whatever it is, like with some intentionality, you know. And then if you know you're going to be eating it, you kind of keep that focus from the moment you step in your hunting spot to the minute you heat your pan, you know.
Okay.
So you know, you want a clean, quick kill without much suffering, and you want to get the meat off the animal and chilled as soon as possible, and... You know, that with care sense. And good intention.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, so I've been looking at, was seeing that you had a new album out. And, you know, I've heard of you just around town within, you know, local singer, songwriters and stuff, where you really came on my radar was your last record, River Blood. Dude, that album is so good. And I'm not calling you to talk about your last record, but that's...
Well, thank you, Jeffrey.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. And so I was really excited about this one. But if you want to compare the new one with the old one, it was mature. It seemed mellow. You know, like you had a couple of mid-tempo songs in there, but most of it was pretty chill. Kind of a rainy day album, real thoughtful, deep, heavy at times. You know, so it wasn't bubblegum or candy. It's not something, you know, that's, I don't know. To me, it was heavy. It was done really great. This new album, it still has all that stuff in it, but there's a little bit more up-tempo songs. You're singing, you're with your kind of yelling growl or whatever, a little more. It's got a little bit more, you know, it's a different record. It's a completely different record. I was kind of expecting something like River Blood, and I feel like I got something a little bit more soulful, more up-tempo bluesy type country stuff.
Right on.
Is that kind of what you were going for, or just do you just kind of just write songs and it just happens whatever happens?
It kind of just comes out how it comes out, kind of organically, working with Clay. You are familiar with Clay Parker?
I'm not, but I love the name. That's a great name.
Man. Yeah, well, he was basically the co-producer and engineer on this thing, and he was the same on River Blood.
Okay.
And my EP before that, Songs in Another House. And he's down in Burnside, Louisiana, down in South Louisiana outside Baton Rouge. And so a lot of that earthiness just comes through, I think, from being down there around it and in it, you know.
Okay.
And having done, you know, like, he's a South Louisiana boy who's always been in love with Bob Dylan's music, you know.
Yeah. And
like, so it kind of makes for, he's got a really, really cool outlook on music, and his tastes in music kind of line up in a lot of real neat ways with mine. And I think a lot of that is what you're hearing on this record.
Okay. Yeah, it's got a lot of mandolin and dobro, as well as the acoustic and bass, you know, but it does have a lot of earthy sounds, as well as you get the slide guitar coming in on a few songs too.
Yeah, that was Clay played most of the electric guitar parts, and then the steel guitar and dobro was a guy named James McCann, who lives down there, who's also a phenomenal songwriter, and he's very much like old school, almost countrypolitan style stuff.
They like it.
Yeah, like, that's what I love, that stuff. Like, I cut my teeth on Ray Price and like Willie Nelson and a String Tie kind of songs, and so like when I met him, it was like, oh, you're my bro. Like, we got along famously, and then like I heard his music, and then when he came to play on like his guitar part on Door Girl, it's so cool and like almost takes it in outer space. And then on Razor Wire too, it was so tasteful and good and soulful. And I think a lot of that new flavor on this record is from him, his influence in a steel playing. And then the mandolin, it's Pete DeMore from Ordinary Elephant.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with him. They're a folk Americana duo from Austin / Opelousas, Louisiana. So,
yeah, I heard you talk about him on the most recent podcast that you did, or at least the most recent one that I listened to, with the guy, was his name Rich?
Maybe.
I can't remember what the gentleman's name was. But it was, but anyways, you talked about Unusual Elephant. Did he say that it was like a husband and wife duo?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I want to look into them. I'm going to see if I can maybe find some of their music and maybe even put it on this episode.
Yeah, Ordinary Elephant's incredible.
Ordinary Elephant.
Yep, and then Clay Parker, the guy who produced it, him and his girlfriend, life mate, partner, have a group called Clay Parker and Jody James. And
okay.
They are so incredible. Like, they are knockout, bro.
Wow, okay.
Like, some of the beautiful music I've ever heard. And it's, yeah.
Now, I do want to say, so you were talking about the steel guitar parts. I think my favorite is in the song Real Man. The solo, because I think he has a couple of solos that are in there that where I'm just like clapping, going, "Yeah, man, this is so good." I mean, he's just, you know, it's really good. And I like that song a whole lot. I heard that song on that radio show as well, and that got me real excited because it sounds kind of like it has almost like a Motown feel to it, kind of. It's there,
right?
It's not in your face, but it's there. It really is a song to make love to your old lady by, you know. It's good. It's a real kind of sexy song, you know. I mean, you could play it, you know, you can play it and light the candles in your room, and you know, and your girl would she'd be like, okay, I see what you're doing, you know. It's a good tune. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the term swamp pop.
No.
Or if you ever listen to like any old Zydeco, like Belton Richard.
No, I don't know a lot of the Louisiana-style type music that came from out of there.
There was another guy named Blackie Guidry, and that's kind of the feel that came out for that song, which is wild because I've always loved that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we started working it, like we put the bass part with it, and I played drums on it, and it was like, oh, man. Hold up. Like, this is like a throwback swamp pop song.
Okay, it's cool.
Because I love that stuff. And I think that's what that almost Motown kind of feel that you're talking about there.
All righty. And you nail it with the voice. I mean, your voice is right on. It's right on par on that song. It's so good. Yeah. And so I look through. I didn't realize that I thought you like wrote the songs and played the acoustic, you know, which you do, but you also play bass and drums as well, which I didn't know that you did that.
Yep. Drums was my first instrument. My father was a drummer.
Okay.
And played in a lot of country and blues bands. And so I kept my teeth like playing drums, like I'd get to go up and sit in once I was old enough, like 13 or 14 or so, to go with him. And I'd sit in and play drums. My dad would take a break, go smoke a cigarette or go drink some brandy in the van or whatever.
Right, you just kind of fill in. Cool.
Yeah. And then when I started playing bass and started playing guitar, I'd do that too. And then actually started playing gigs with Dad, you know, when I was a teenager, as well as like doing my own thing, like playing coffee shops. In the 90s, man, coffee shops were everywhere.
Sure, yeah, they were.
And they all had live music.
Yeah.
So like for a teenager, it was like a place to go book your own shows and play without having to worry about, are you old enough to be in a bar?
Right. No, I did the singer songwriter thing in the coffee shops because I graduated in 1990, and you know, so that was the perfect time because I could go and I could play these little shows with my acoustic, you know, whatever, and singing these little. I remember there being one over on Hearst, like off, I can't remember what it was, like Harwood or something like that I used to go to.
And, Coffee House Central in Bedford.
Okay.
Next to the Second Save.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, I remember.
Yeah.
No, those are good. I remember the whole coffee shop phase. I miss going to the, like, not the Starbucks, but just everybody. It was just every little town, every little neighborhood had, like, its own little coffee shop where they served the espressos and all that stuff. But you had, like, your kind of like your beat poets that would hang out there, your intellectuals that are reading books, and some guy in the corner playing his guitar and singing folk songs. It was cool.
Yeah, man, it was, wasn't it? Somebody should, you don't ever hear people talk about that particular aspect of 90s culture, but that was a real thing, man. Like, if you ever went to like Coffee House Central in Arlington, or Coffee House in Arlington, the one on Lincoln Square, that place was exactly what you just described.
Okay.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's where me and Andy Pickett got to know each other.
Okay. Was that a coffee shop like that?
Yeah. Was it? Yeah. It was a Coffee House in Arlington.
How funny. Even, do you remember, So I Married an Axe Murderer with Mike Myers?
So
part of that show takes place in a coffee shop because that's what was going on at that time period.
She was a thief. You got to believe.
Yeah. Whoa, man. That's funny. So, speaking of your dad and stuff, how many brothers do you have?
I have two younger brothers.
Okay. Because I know, so there's just three of you? Because I know Nate and I know Ryan. And so those are both your brothers?
Yep. And then we got two older half-sisters we found out about, like, 5 years before my dad passed away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always interesting, huh?
It was interesting, man. It was pretty wild.
So I've always known you as the musician Brigmore, and then Nate was the fisherman. He always was always crappie fishing. I'm assuming he's still crappie fishing. And then Ryan was always my mechanic. He would come over and fix my cars. I'd call him, and he would, you know, hey man, I got this problem. He's like, okay. And he'd come over and always gave me a good deal, and always, you know, did well. Did Nate and Ryan ever play any instruments?
No.
No, it's just you.
My brother Nathan played saxophone a little bit in junior high.
Okay.
But
they never got into the.
Yeah. Never got us into it, I guess. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why it stuck so hard with me.
Uh huh.
But.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, because I thought, you know, because it'd be neat if y'all did all play, you know, and it's like one of you played the guitar and one played the bass and the drums, you know, you're the Prigmore brothers or whatever, you know.
It's like the weirdest Partridge Family.
Yeah, it would be kind of East Texas backwoods Partridge Family.
Yeah.
So, there's been a couple of stories that I've heard, and I've never really heard like the whole stories, but like, so on the last podcast I was listening to, he asked you a question about a crossroads or whatever, and you casually said, well, there was this time when I was a collector for a personal loan officer. And I was like, what? You know, and then you're like, and you said that you stopped doing it because, you know, you're always putting yourself into dangerous situations and stuff. And I'm like, what? That sounds like you're the guy that breaks people's legs if they don't pay their gambling debts or whatever. It just sounded so shady and stuff. But can you get in to that at all? What is doing collections for a personal loan officer?
I can get into that a little bit, and I don't think I like incriminate myself too much, but yeah. I worked for a man.
Go ahead.
His oldest son, the guy I worked for, his oldest son was my best friend from high school, and I had worked for his dad, run a remodel and construction crews for a while.
Uh-huh.
And he had this other thing, this cash lending business going on the side, and needed some help. You know, he had these outstanding debts in his book, and, you know, I was very committed to him and his family. And so
you had to go over there and knock on the door and be like, hey, man.
Yeah. So I took, you know, I started, like, I took like one or two accounts over, you know, and said, well, let me work these and see if I can get you paid. And then if that works out, then we'll go from there and see. And so I was able to do that for him and get him his money. And so then I guess, 'cause he felt, well, now I've got this guy who go to bat for me. I'll work the hard money lending angle a little more, and then get Stefan to work my book. And, that's what I did for a while.
Dude, I can't.
Or for him,
I can't think of too many things worse. That seems so scary to me. You know, I've seen like the videos of people trying to get their cars repossessed, and I'm like, I wouldn't want to be like a repo driver. I think that would be so terrible. You know, but at least you have a car that you can get. There's something physical there that you maybe can sneak over in the middle of the night when they're asleep or whatever, and try to, you know. But yeah, having to go talk to somebody face to face and be like, "Hey, man, you owe some money." You know, I'm here to get it. You know, it's just, it's always, now it's got to be awkward and weird, and it could be dangerous. You know, it just sounds awful to me.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason why it came easy to me is because there's a lot of healthy fear that I kind of lack.
Oh, okay.
And a large portion of foolishness on my part. And, thinking I'm a lot bigger than I really am, and sometimes people believe it.
Yeah, and say no. A lot of times, that's all you need, and people are like, "Okay, you know what? I'm just going to back on down. This guy seems really confident, and you know, a little crazy, and I'm not quite sure exactly what he's capable of."
Just comes down to confidence and speaking bluntly and honestly about the situation. You know, and if you. It's weird talking about it, but if you're good at it, you don't ever get sideways with anybody.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because really, kind of looking at it as like, you got yourself into this shitty mess with my boss.
Right.
And here's how we're going to get you out.
Right. Because you're not shaking somebody down saying, "Hey, if you want your business to be safe, you'll pay us some money or whatever." You know, this is... You made this loan and took it out, and so now you got to pay it back. So we got to just make this square. That's cool. Now you just had to
sleazeball people. You know, it wasn't people that can go to the bank and get a loan.
Right. Well, I figure because they wouldn't be going to a guy in borrowing cash if they could just go down, and I'm sure their credit isn't the best or whatever.
Yeah.
Now there's a whole economy of that kind of stuff. And the interesting thing is, one of the reasons why I brought it up is because some of these things that you've experienced in your life, even if you don't write about them, which you do also write about them, it still comes across. It's very authentic. Whenever you read or whenever you listen, you're not like, "Oh, this guy's bullshit, and this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This guy hasn't lived this life. This guy hasn't, you know, doesn't know anything about catfishing or whatever." I mean, it's like you can tell by listening to it, this guy knows what he's singing about. It's real. It's authentic. You know, it's honest.
Well, I'm glad that comes across, man, because I was just talking to a buddy of mine, like, whatever you're doing, if it's not authentic, it's not worth shit. Whatever it is.
Right.
You know? Like, if it's not, why are you even doing it, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. But there are people out there that are like, we live in a world now to where it doesn't have to be authentic. Everything is fake. Everything is virtual reality. And it's just whatever people see on the social media becomes truth or whatever. And then you figure out, I can actually make a dollar at this. And the more outrageous I am, the more people that'll see me and... or want to see me, and then the more dollars I'll make, and then it just becomes this grift, and you know, somehow that works. You know, it's not authentic and it's empty, but people are doing it, and it makes me sad, man. That's why I like your stuff. I like the stuff that's real. So you were saying, like you do Door Girl as a live song at the end of River Blood, and then you have it on here as a studio song, which I love. It's so great. But you say, you know, this is a song about a girl that I was in love with that my brother ran away to Houston with.
Yeah.
And so that's a true story, huh?
Yeah. Oh, my brother. Because you said, "Hey, you got two brothers in there in Fort Worth." Man, we got a fourth brother, like a surrogate.
Okay.
Named JT.
And is this the brother that took your girl and went to Houston?
Yeah, well, she went with him to Houston.
Okay, yeah.
For lots of good reasons.
It's so funny.
So, yeah.
And it was a girl that worked the door at the Grotto.
Yep. Yep. And I think, like, I'm not going to say her name.
Sure.
But she knows the songs about her. And I think a lot of people in Fort Worth know her and know the songs about her. But
that's funny.
Yeah. 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 Now, she's a sweetheart.
Yeah. Now, I miss the Grotto. That was a good place.
Yeah, me too. That was amazing. Did you ever go to the Fairmount when it was open?
I don't. Is that the one over here on Magnolia, like right off of it? Was it?
It was, yep. It was like Magnolia and Hemp Hill.
Yeah, I think so. And then is it like the Free Play now or something? Was that the Fairmount?
No, now it's like the Mother's Milk Bank.
Oh, okay, I don't think I was ever went there then.
Like human milk storage.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's different.
Yeah, but it's different. That is different.
I think a lot of the culture, well, kind of the same. I don't know. Depends on how you look at it. Anyway, I think a lot of the culture of the Grotto came from the Fairmount after it closed.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. See, I didn't make that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I was plugged in at that time. Yeah, whenever I first got going on, it was like, it was a cellar, it was the Grotto.
Right.
You know, and Lola's was over there, you know. And so, yeah, no, it's weird over there now, in that little area of town.
Yeah, it is. I haven't lived in Fort Worth in a few years. But last time I went down to play at Magnolia, it's like, I don't know. People are going to start talking about Fort Worth like they've been talking about Austin for 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, man, it's just not the same Fort Worth. And what they're talking about is however they knew it 5 years ago.
Right. It's never going to be the same Fort Worth. It's, you know, and in 5 years, we're going to be going, it's not the same as it was 5 years ago. It's like, it's not. It's not supposed to be.
That's right. It's not. Everything changes. Right. Right.
Yeah. It does kind of suck, man. Like, I'm getting old. I'm 50 now. And it's like, and I'll drive around places and be like, damn it. You know, I remember whenever this was here or this was here and this isn't there anymore. I really like whenever buildings stay and I can go, that's been there as long as I've been here or longer, you know. But now it's like there's just certain parts of town where it's like, it's just different. The skyscraper changes and it's better or worse. I don't know. But, you know, sometimes you do kind of get to be, because I like change. I'm a progressive type where, you know, I figured that we should always be trying to move forward and evolve and change for the better and progress, you know. So, but with that comes change. And sometimes it kind of sucks. You're like, ah, oh, man. But
yeah, and it's change, but like when it changes to something that is unfamiliar, either because we're getting old, and getting old sucks, brother.
Yeah.
It's rough. Like, I'm waiting for that wisdom everybody talks about to kick in, and I don't know that I've seen much. Maybe you ask my wife. But either because you're getting old, and getting old is terrible, or because it's some change, it doesn't jive with the culture of the thing as you've known it.
Right.
And I think that's what's going on in Fort Worth. Like, a lot of, like, people used to say, like, Fort Worth was a big town that feels like a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And all those people that felt like it was a small town don't recognize it anymore.
I think that's right. Now it's a big town that kind of feels like a big town.
Yeah. It's all that money, bro.
I know. It is.
You can't just throw money at something and expect culture and intelligence to show up. You know, and it's like that's what they're trying to do with that. With a lot of things there, it's weird.
Yeah, I know a lot of the culture, at least a lot of the good arts, I mean, I guess it's relative, a lot of the stuff that I enjoy tends to come from impoverished neighborhoods. You know, it doesn't usually come from the richy neighborhoods, the fancy neighborhoods. It usually comes from the, and that's what sucks, because it's like, oh, we don't have a whole lot of money, we don't have a whole lot of, you know, that kind of stuff, but we can still do really cool things. And so you take this poor part of town and you start to do all these really cool things, just yourself, your own community. You start to take care of the buildings and putting up murals and start opening up coffee shops or little bars and having people play, and you start doing little block parties, and all of a sudden it becomes the cool neighborhood. Then all the wealth comes in. Oh, we can capitalize off this. And they all start coming in and putting up the fancier coffee shops and the fancier bars and the hotels and all this stuff. And runs all the those people out, and then you got to go to a different part of town and start over again, you know.
Yeah, man, like look at like food culture. Like all the best food in the world came from impoverished people making do with what they had.
Mm-hmm.
Like name anything, any like you could name any like commonplace and super popular food item and trace it back to that.
Yeah, because it seems to me like you're only going to eat snails if you can't afford to buy meat. But now, snails is like a big thing. You know, your escargot or whatever.
Yeah, they're like Cajun food.
Oh, yeah.
Cajun food starts out of a people that showed up in a place where they had no idea what anything was and made do with what they could find. You know, with like sassafras, with crawfish, frogs, wild ducks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all of that.
It's throw it all in a big pot with some shrimp, some beans, and some rice.
Right. Yeah, man. Like, and like soul food is that way. Geez, man, burgers were that way. Like, that's how burgers came about. It was the cheap leftover meat, you know, the cheap leftover cuts. What are we going to do with this? Well, grind it up. Yeah, we don't want to make sausage. We need to get rid of it, get it out the door. Well, and grill that shit up, put it on some bread.
And some cheese and some mayo. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a meal.
Huh. I never thought about it. You're probably right.
Yeah. No, I am. Like, there have been books written about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it applies to, I think, all art and culture and creativity as well, too. You know, like if Ralph Stanley had grown up in a big house with lots of money and never wanted for anything, he never would have done any of the music he did.
Right. See, that's what I always wonder. You know, I wonder about that stuff. I mean, because there is the thought that he wouldn't. But, you know, when you compare, and this is kind of off, but like you compare Jesus and the Buddha, Jesus was born in a manger to a poor family, you know, and so even though he was like the son of God or whatever, the king of kings and all that stuff, he was raised in poverty. But the Buddha was like born to a king and was like raised in a palace or something like that. And so the Buddha's whole life, all he ever saw was beautiful young people. And then when he, as an adult, he walked out the gates and saw like regular people. He saw people that actually got old and that were sick and crippled and all this stuff. And that actually changed him to do his, you know, to become the Buddha. That was his crossroads or whatever. You know, that was what he saw. And so he went the way he went. Where Jesus was poor and was raised in poverty, and that actually made him go the route that he went. You know, and it's just interesting because they both kind of went similar routes, but they both came from totally different. One's from poverty, one's from wealth. And so I wonder, maybe it's not the same with the arts as it is with spirit or whatever that is. You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's like, so the name of the album is Everything Is At Least Both, right?
Uh-huh.
Because what you're talking about is absolutely true. Like both, it's at least both and all of, it's at least all of that we just said.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Did you ever know Rodney Moore?
Man, I know that name. I don't know that I know him.
He was a Fort Worth guy. He started the Last Call Picket Around the Campfire.
Okay.
Here in Fort Worth, it's been going on now for, I think, like 7 years, and now it's at Dirty Water Saloon. He passed away a couple years. He passed away last year in October. And we used to talk philosophy and whatever kind of bullshit. And something we always came back to was everything is at least both. Like nothing is just this or that. You know?
Right. And I don't disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that applies with what you're talking about Jesus and the Buddha.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think it's cool that you're able to tie it in with the title of your album as well, because that does make sense.
Yeah, I feel like that suits the record too, because it's a little bit all over the place, you know?
Yeah, because there are some spiritual aspects to it. Like the CV19 is about a preacher, if I'm right? Wasn't it about a preacher? And yeah. you have David and Goliath on here, and you've got a devil dog. So there's definitely some spiritual type imagery.
Yeah. Right on.
Speaking of Devil Dog and the Rattlesnake, that's a fantastic song, and it's a great story. And I don't even want to say what it's about or how it goes and how it ends, because it's really fun to like listen to it, and then when it's over, you're like, "Ha, that was awesome!" You know, I don't want to spoil it or whatever. But that was a good one. I also really liked Gunpowder and Pine. Ah, that was a really great song. Reading through some of your notes, I saw that I Play C is a cover. And that's a local guy, right? James Michael Russell. What was his name? I'm sorry. What was it again?
James Michael Taylor.
That's what it is. James Michael Taylor. Yeah.
Worst guy.
Yeah. That's a great song. And it was great. Lyrics. I didn't know that you didn't. Because I listened to the record first, then I went back and read some of the notes and credits and stuff, and that's where I saw that it was credited to James Michael Taylor. I was like, oh, okay, that's one of his songs, which makes sense. I've heard some of his songs. His songs are real kind of clever like that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that one's about a guitar that his father had, like an old Montgomery Ward's, like, cheap guitar. And he only knew a couple chords, you know, and when he'd get a little lonesome, he'd pick it up and play, like, kind of stumble through a Jimmy Rogers tune or something. Yeah.
So whenever, because I haven't tried yet, so whenever you're playing the song and you sing, I Play C, are you playing a C? And then you go, I Play G, and then you go to your G when you're saying that, and they go, and I Play A minor, does it go to the... Okay, I was hoping it did, and I figured it did, but I wasn't really sure. I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe not. Maybe it's just lyrics. That's cool. Yep. That works out. All right, awesome.
Yeah, and then there's another cover on there too on the record.
Yeah, that was where I was going next. Is that the Razor Wire?
Yep.
And so it says Heather Little. I don't know who Heather Little is.
Oh, bro, Heather is she might be the best songwriter alive, and I realize the weight that carries. I fully realize the weight that carries to say something like that, but she just might be. She's originally from, I think she was born in Dallas, but grew up mostly in East Texas.
Okay.
And until August, she lived in Lyndale, which is out here in Van Zandt County.
Mm-hmm.
And then she moved to Tennessee this past August to be with her husband and the family life. She's been working real hard to create up there.
Oh, okay. But,
she's written, like, Razor Wire was one of the first songs I ever heard her play and just floored me. But she's also written a lot of songs you probably heard on the radio. Her songs have been covered by Miranda Lambert. Randall Lambert had two big hits with some of her songs.
Oh.
Casey Musgraves, Sonny Sweeney.
Wow.
Travis Meadows. Yeah, she's incredible. And she's got this knack for, like, writing these honest, authentic as hell songs that are approachable as pop country. You know what I mean? Like, most songwriters of that caliber tend to alienate a lot of folks, but she doesn't.
Right.
She has some strong, powerful songs that can touch the community. And it's not like she uses lowest common denominator or broad strokes. She's, you know, she speaks and writes and sings very specifically about the feelings in these songs. But she just has this knack for making it so damn inclusive of the, like, approachable aspect of humanity that just about anybody can relate to. And it's a magic gift, and it's so rare, Jeff. It's so weird that somebody comes along and do that.
Now, I mean, look. Now, let's say last. So I was listening to this album last night, and I was walking my dog, and so I take him out, and I usually go on about a 35 to 40 minute walk with the dog, which was perfect because of the album. I think is 36 minutes. And this song comes on, and like the first line is, "If I'm ever lost, please come and find me. Bring all your guns and your sharpest hunting knives." I was like, "Dude, that's awesome." But then it goes on, you know, "Load for bear and set out early. Walk all day and well into the night. When the sun sets, light your lantern. Let them burn the whole night through. And while and all the while you're out there wandering, wondering what to do, I'll be looking for you too." I was like, "Holy fuck, this is good. It's so good." You know, I was like, I got chills, and I was like, "Man, this is great." And I was, you know, and I was going to tell you that, you know, it was a really great moment whenever I heard this, and I thought, what great lines. And like I said, I think you're a really great writer. I thought it was you, you know. And then I looked up here, and I was kind of bummed. I was like, "Oh, you didn't write this. Somebody else did." I was like, "It's so good," you know. But I know that you think that she's a brilliant writer, and I can't disagree. This whole song is just awesome. It's so written so well.
Yeah, man, she's one of the very best. She has a new record in the works. She made with a producer I'm not going to name here, but it's going to be magic. And she's got some real incredible people that you probably heard of and know playing on the record.
Awesome.
Out in California. Yep.
That's cool, man. All right.
Yeah.
And then I was going to ask you about. I mean, dude, I could go through and ask you about it, every single song, but I'm not. I'm going to ask one more. So, Lucretia.
Uh huh.
Now, is this about a real person? And like you said, Olsen's. But whenever you say Olsen's, what I think of is the bait and tackle shop in Lake Worth. But that's not what you're. Is that the one?
Olsen off 199. Yeah, brother.
So that's the song. Okay. And so did this lady actually work there? Or is it just. I didn't quite get it.
I don't know.
If it was a true story or just kind of like a legend or.
Well, yeah. Like it's somewhere in the middle there, right? Like it's at least both. So I don't know what her name was, the woman that worked there. She didn't work there anymore. It's been some years.
Mm hmm.
But she was a hard lady, you know, and like she was very kind, very sweet to me, you know, every time I was in there. But she could also like cuss that would make my alcoholic grandfather blush.
Sure.
Like, I mean, like a hard lady. And so there was this old dude that used to go in there and hit on her.
Oh.
And ask her out. And, one day I was coming in and I saw him leaving. I said, "Hey, Jerry, how's it going?" He said, "I swear on God, I'm going to kill her." And I thought, shit, well, I hope he doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I'd had that, like, bouncing around in my head. And then, I guess shortly after that, my friend Guthrie called me. You know Guthrie Kinnard?
I don't know him, but, man, I love his stuff.
Isn't he incredible?
Yeah.
So he called me. He said, "Stefan, I've got this. I want you to help me write a song. Will you do that?" And I said, "Absolutely, Guthrie, I'd love to." He said, "Okay, well, I'm going to send you a recording of what I got so far, and I want you to come up with some real, real greasy lyrics, you know, for it. Will you do that for me?" And I said, "Oh, Guthrie, of course. I'd be honored. I'd love to." So he sent me some music that was sort of like what I'm playing there, and I had this thing bouncing around in my head about the girl at Olsen's from years and years ago. And so I wrote this song about it, you know?
Okay.
And in the last line, I talk about the motors churn her up all dark and muddy like the heart of the river's own sun.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I was thinking about that. Remember there used to be a paddle boat on Lake Worth, the Queen Mary?
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, I believe, because I know that there was a whole, there was a casino down there and all kinds of stuff. I didn't know there was a Queen Mary. That's cool.
Yeah, there was a paddle boat, and it was there until, like, I don't know, maybe 25 years ago or something. And, like, they used to have bands play on the paddle boat and, like, would go out around the lake while the band played and you dance or whatever. And it was, like, this whole thing. But somebody fell off at some point, I guess in the 80s probably, and got caught in the paddle.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
by the time they saw what had happened, you couldn't really, I mean, it was just like pink water, you know, was all there was.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was thinking about that. Yeah. So I was thinking about that when I wrote the song. So I got this song and this story kind of put together in my head of what I saw and what I thought and felt about it. And, I got it all done, man. I was so happy. I was so proud of the song. I was like, this is a bad son of a gun. Like, this sounds like a Guthrie Kinnard song. I hope he digs it. So I called him and I was like, hey, Guthrie. He said, hi, Stephen. How are you? I said, I'm good. I said, you know, you asked me to help you write that song. Oh, I did? Yeah. You don't remember? Oh, I don't. What is it? Is it good? I'm like, man. All right.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's kind of the story how that song came out. And then I thought the production on it with Clay was just awesome.
That was great.
Like, I didn't know it was going to work on this record, but like, when we got James in there playing dobro and Pete, and then Clay's bass part just kind of cooked it and drove it, and I was like, yeah, man, that's righteous. I dig it. I like it a whole lot. Now I'm real glad it's on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun record. I really enjoyed listening to it. You know, like I said, I listened to it last night, and then I was like, I'm going to go back and listen to River Blood just for context, because I was like, I don't remember it being, because I remember that being kind of mellow, and so I just, so I was kind of expecting something a little bit more mellow, and then I got into this, I was like, whoa, this is not as mellow as the last one, so I went back and listened to that, you know, the first one, and it's like, I like them both, but they're, to me, they're different albums, and I think that the fact that Clay Parker did them both, and another one, and is able to get, because I mean, it sounds like you, but it's not the same record again, which is good. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to, yeah, you know, sure. Like I said, we want to progress and grow, and you know, and I think you did with this one. I think it's really good. When does it come out? When's it available for everybody?
November 11th.
November 11th.
11/11. On November 11th, I'll be in Louisiana. I'm playing two shows down there in Baton Rouge and St. Francisville.
Awesome.
But then I'm coming back and doing a deal in Fort Worth on the 17th.
Okay.
Tulips.
At Tulips?
And, yeah, and James McCann is going to be with me on steel guitar and dobro.
Oh, nice.
And we're going to play the whole record, like, beginning to end. And before that, Terry Klein and Kevin Tinney are opening. Have you heard either one of them?
No.
Oh man, they're good. Terry Klein is an Austin guy. He's originally from Boston. He's a reformed lawyer and makes incredible music. I think Walt Wilkins made his first two records, and then his last one was made by this kind of bluegrass, I don't know, bluegrass knight of the realm, I guess you call him, named Tom Yutz. And it's real good. It's called Good Luck, Take Care. And then Kevin Tinney is an East Texas guy, and he's a phenomenal songwriter, too.
Okay.
And so both of those guys are playing on the 17th at Tulips in Fort Worth with me and James McCann.
Awesome. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah. And the album will be out and streaming a week before that on November 11th.
Good deal. And then you'll have some physical copies there probably to sell?
Yep. Good. Yep, I sure will. I sure will. Awesome. And some other awesome stuff too.
Awesome, man. Now, like I said, it's a great record. It's fun, you know, and I hope everybody checks it out and then it comes out and sees you on the 17th.
The album comes out on the 11th.
On the 11th, and they can see you at Tulips on the 17th.
Yep.
And then, do you have a website or anything?
I do. It's I think it's stephanpriegmore.net.
Okay, I'll put a link in there. I'll find it and I'll put a link in there for it.
It's got all my dates, and I got, like, you know, Facebook and Instagram and Patreon and all that other stuff, too.
All right, and they can find your older stuff on Apple and Spotify and all that kind of good stuff, all the streaming stuff.
Yep, and for so, sure.
While you're waiting, you can hear, you listen to River Blood or a couple other EPs and get yourself ready for this new record. So, man, it's been a lot of fun.
It has. Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Yeah. If you talk to any of your brothers, tell them I said hey.
I sure will. I sure will.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. You take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Girl, I know I've been wrong before. didn't put my best foot forward, baby. But you. But yesterday I met your mama. She begged me, please, please don't make her blue. So I'm gonna try, girl, I try to love you like a real man ought to do. Yeah, I'm gonna try, girl, I try to love you like a real man ought to do. Woke up this morning, you were crying, baby. Hit me so hard, I started crying too. So I got some coffee, please let me help you. You said,
ship's not sinking, throwing tantrums like like jets I'm out to sea. See what's for sale and what's for certain. Wash it up to greet me. Etching your actions in the ember. Hollow fossils to outlive a song. So I'll stagger my love of what's right and what we're made of. And wait for your hate.
There was this life that you'd breathe into me, but you won't return.